Instantly, Falcon drew his pistol and turned toward the sound of the voice. But when Dunaway saw how quickly Falcon had drawn, he changed his mind and let his own pistol fall back in the holster as he put his hands up.
No, 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 don't shoot. Mr. McAllister, for God's sakes, don't shoot.
You're the one that invited me to the dance, mister.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I thought I could beat you.
Are you with Tate?
What?
Loomis Tate. Are you with Loomis Tate?
No, no, I don't know who or what you're talking about.
If you aren't with Tate, why'd you try and kill me?
Because I thought I could. I'm the Colorado Kid, and I thought I could beat you.
You're the what?
The Colorado Kid. You never heard about me, but someday you will.
What's your name?
I told you, the Colorado...
What's your real name?
Dunaway. Danny Dunaway.
Falcon holstered his pistol.
Dunaway, have you ever killed a man?
Yeah, sure. I killed plenty of men.
Falcon didn't answer. Instead, he just continued to stare at Dunaway.
Well, not plenty of men, but some. All right, no, hell no, I never killed anyone yet. I'm fast. I'm very fast.
I take it that you've never been shot at either.
Well, no. But I'm not afraid to stand up to anyone. I just never had a chance to do it before now. Ow! God!
Dunaway slapped his hand to his ear. Blood began to run through his fingers. Falcon had shot off his earlobe.
What'd you do that for?
I want you to know what you're getting yourself into. When you're facing another man with a gun, death can come quick. In your case, you just lost part of your ear. It was a cheap lesson.
Dunaway didn't answer. Instead, he just stared at Falcon, all the while trying to hold back the blood from the wound in his ear. Falcon nodded at the bartender.
I reckon I'll go check out the hotel you told me about.
The Morning Star Hotel? It's just down the street. Tell them Jake Conroy sent you.
Why? Will it get me a better deal?
No, but it will get me a dime. I get a dime every time I send someone over.
I'll do that for you.
McAllister, wait!
Falcon whirled around, but saw that Dunaway had made no move to get to his gun. Dunaway pointed at him.
This ain't over!
Falcon just nodded. Then, picking up his saddlebags, he turned and left the saloon. Kelly Tate had watched the whole thing unfold between Falcon and Dunaway. Kelly had come into town to meet Falcon because he was the only one of Loomis's gang that Falcon had never seen. Kelly had recognized Falcon from the description provided by Loomis and the others. When the big man came in carrying saddlebags over his shoulders, Kelly was fairly certain he had the right man. Then he heard McAllister introduce himself to the others in the card game. Kelly wasn't supposed to meet him until the following night. He had just come into town ahead of time in order to get a feel of things. He couldn't say that he was all that surprised that McAllister had come in early as well. In any case, Kelly still had the advantage. He now knew who McAllister was, and McAllister didn't know who he was. It gave him a sense of power to be able to observe without being observed. Kelly felt as if he were well in charge of the situation until he saw Dunaway challenge McAllister. That could have changed everything. If Dunaway had killed McAllister, then the money would have been lost. He was glad that McAllister wasn't killed. If anyone was going to kill McAllister, he was the one who was going to do it. It wasn't until that moment that the idea of killing McAllister came into Kelly's mind. If he killed McAllister tonight, everyone would think Dunaway did it, and Kelly would have the $20,000. He looked at Dunaway, who was standing down at the end of the bar. Nobody else was around him. He was staring morosely into his beer. His ear had stopped bleeding, but it was crusty from old blood. Kelly walked over to him and stared long and hard at Dunaway.
What do you want?
He cheated you.
What?
Well, when you challenge a man to draw, you expect him to turn around and face you, then draw. I seen what happened. You challenged him to draw, but he pulled his gun first, then turned around. You being a fair man, wasn't expecting that.
Right. I wasn't expecting it. I mean, by the time he turned, he already had his gun in his hand. Well, what was I supposed to do?
You'd done what any sane man would do. You kept your gun in your holster.
Yeah, and a lot of good it did me. Son of a bitch shot me anyway.
You know what I think?
What's that?
I think if you killed him now, nobody'd blame you for it. I mean, hell, Everyone in here seen him shoot off part of your ear. It would be self-defense, pure and simple.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. And I'm gonna face him down, too. I just need to,
Why do you need to face him down? Just do it.
What do you mean, just do it?
Just kill the son of a bitch. Everybody's seen him threaten you. Everybody's seen him try to kill you. He missed and hit you in the ear. But make no mistake, he was aiming to hit you right between the eyes.
No, I think he
was aiming to hit you right between the eyes. Everybody's seen it. That means if you kill him, no matter how you do it, it would be self-defense.
I'll do it. You want a drink?
I don't mind if I do.
Barkeep, a shot for me and a shot from a friend.
What you celebrating?
I'm gonna kill McAllister.
Kelly lifted the drink to his lips, noticing the bartender's reaction as he did so. Even as Kelly was talking to Dunaway, he was forming a new plan. Rather than killing McAllister and blaming it on Dunaway, why not let Dunaway actually do the killing? Kelly could go with him, not only to goad Dunaway into actually doing it, but also to take care of things once it was over. He'd knock Dunaway out after McAllister was killed. That way he'd be able to take the saddlebags without any interference and leave Dunaway to take the responsibility.
I'll go with you if you want me to.
What? Go with me where?
To kill McAllister.
Why would you want to do that?
Because you're my friend. I wouldn't want to see my friend have to face someone like McAllister all by himself. No, sir. When you kill that son of a bitch, I'll be there.
You will?
Absolutely. And I'll tell people how you beat him fair and square. Think of it. Colorado kid kills Falcon McAllister in a head-to-head gunfight.
I thought you said I wouldn't have to face him.
You don't have to face him. I'm just saying what I'll be telling others about it.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Kelly looked at the clock standing on the wall at the back of the saloon. It was 11:15.
Come on. I heard him say that he was going to take a room at the Morning Star. This be as good a time as any to take care of.
I guess you're right.
By this time tomorrow, the Colorado Kid will be known all over the West. The man who killed Falcon McAllister.
Yeah. Yeah! Come on. What are we waiting for?
The lobby of the Morning Star Hotel was dimly lit by a single lantern that was burning low. The night clerk was asleep at the counter. Kelly held his finger to his lips, then the two of them walked quietly around the lobby floor to the counter. There, Kelly turned the book around and, moving into the light of the lamp, looked at the registered guests. He found what he was looking for on the bottom line. Falcon McAllister, McAllister Valley, Colorado. Room 12. He pointed out the entry to Dunaway, then the two of them started up the stairs to find room 12. The hallway was long and narrow, flanked on both sides by numbered doors. It was illuminated by lanterns that were mounted along the wall. Because of the way the numbers were running, Kelly knew that the room they were looking for would be at the far end of the hallway. Kelly reached up to extinguish the first lantern. Dunaway extinguished the next, and as they progressed down the hall, they were followed by lengthening shadows behind them. Inside room number 12, Falcon McAllister slumbered. Falcon wasn't sure why the creaking floorboard had awakened him, but now he lay in bed, very quietly, trying to hear another sound. Then, a little flash of some kind caused him to look up into the transom window over his door. The transom was open to provide some cross-current breeze from his open window. Because of the way the transom was tilted, he could see the glowing lights of the hallway in the window's reflection. As he looked, the lamp went out. It wasn't until then that he realized that more than half the hallway was already in darkness. Then he saw the two men. One reached up to extinguish a lantern, knew that the lights were being purposely doused. As the two men moved closer to his room, he recognized one of them as Denny Dunaway. Both Dunaway and the man with him had their pistols drawn, and they were coming quietly and determinedly toward his room. Sliding his pistol out of the holster that hung from the headpost of his bed, Falcon slowly crept out of the bed. Reaching down, he fluffed up the pillow and covers, then moved quickly to the side of the room. As the men got closer, the angle of the transom window was such that it no longer disclosed their position, so Falcon lost the advantage of being able to watch as they approached. So he waited.
Draw, McAllister!
Dunaway! I'm over here!
Dunaway whirled toward Falcon and fired. Falcon returned fire.
Dunaway!
Falcon raced to the door to confront the other man, but he had already run to the far end of the hall, disappearing around the corner. Falcon started after him, but couldn't fire because he couldn't see and might shoot an innocent.
Son of a bitch's gone through the window.
Answering Marshal Kingsley's request that he do so, Falcon McAllister showed up at Judge T. Bonley Craig's office the next morning. Craig's office was in the back of the town courthouse, and he stepped out of his office when Falcon and Kingsley arrived.
Good morning, gentlemen. I hear we had a little excitement last night.
Craig was a tall, gaunt, white-haired man in his late 70s. He had been a colonel during the Civil War, assigned to the Judge Advocate Corps.
That's right, Your Honor.
And this is the man who was involved in the shooting?
Yes, sir.
Well, there must be a pretty strong case of justifiable homicide. Otherwise, you would have him in jail.
Your Honor, if you would allow me, I'd like to give you the results of my investigation.
By all means. Please do so, Marshal.
Wait out here, would you, Mr. McAllister, until I speak with the judge?
I'll wait.
Mr. McAllister, I trust you will still be here when the Marshal finishes his report. But to make it official, I hereby bind you with a court order to wait right here until I release you.
I'll be right here when you come out.
As Falcon waited, he studied a Currier and Ives lithograph on the wall entitled American Express Trains, Leaving the Junction. It was a painting of two trains running together on parallel tracks, with their bell-shaped stacks sending smoke billowing up into the night. There was a cloud cover in the sky, but a hole in the clouds allowed a full moon to peek through, limning the clouds in luminescent silver. Huge gas lamps glowed just in front of the stacks, while every window of every passenger car was bright with light. It was a pleasant picture to contemplate, and Falcon could easily understand why the judge had it on his wall.
Still here, I see.
Yes, sir, I'm still here. I'm not about to violate a court order.
Well, it's good to see that you're a man of your word. Now, about this ruckus in the hotel last night. Marshal Kingsley has done a thorough investigation of the case. There were several witnesses in the long trail who said they would testify that they saw the decedent challenge you last night. They said that you could have killed him then and had every right to do so, but you spared his life. And the bartender will testify that later, after you had already left the saloon, he heard Dunaway say he was going to kill you. And, if that wasn't enough, there are 4 empty cartridges in Dunaway's gun, and there are 3 bullet holes in the pillow on the bed and 1 in the wall. He was shot 1 time, and when the marshal examined your gun, he found only 1 empty cartridge. Is that about right?
Yes, sir.
Do you have anything to add?
Yes, sir.
Craig looked at Kingsley, surprised to hear that Falcon had something to add. Kingsley lifted his shoulders as if saying he had no idea what Falcon was about to say.
All right, then, let's hear it.
There was someone else out in the hall last night. Someone was with Dunaway.
Oh, yes, Kingsley did mention that. Did you get a look at him?
No, I didn't. By the time I got to the door, the second assailant, whoever it was already back in the dark end of the hall.
What about before in the saloon? Was Dunaway with anyone that you could tell?
As far as I could tell, he was alone.
All right. Marshal, I congratulate you on a very thorough investigation. I don't believe there is any need to hold an official inquiry. That is, unless you have other evidence to report.
I've given you everything I have, Your Honor.
Then, In the matter of the death of Denny Dunaway, I rule it justifiable homicide, and will have a court document drawn up declaring the same. Mr. McAllister, the court order requiring you to remain here is lifted. You are free to go.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Craig extended his hand and Falcon shook it. The judge then exited back into his office.
Well, thank you, Marshal, for, as the judge said, a most thorough investigation.
I was glad to be service to you, Mr. McAllister. I just wish I had some idea as to who the other man was. Could be dangerous not knowing. He could try again.
I'll just have to stay vigilant.
Falcon reached for his saddlebags and slung them across his shoulder.
Marshal, this is taking up most of the morning. It's nearly noon now. How about letting me buy you lunch?
I never turned down the opportunity for a free lunch. You've been carrying those saddlebags ever since I saw you. Would you like me to lock them up in my office?
No, thanks. They're no trouble. I can keep up with them. Now, about lunch. Do you have a suggestion as to where we might eat?
Ziegenhorn's?
No offense. Ziegenhorn is a nice fellow. But I've eaten at Ziegenhorn's. Is there any other place you might suggest?
Well, we could go to Tinker's Cafe, I suppose. He charges a little more than Ziegenhorn.
Is his food better?
Oh, yes. About as good as a place as any in town.
I don't mind paying a little extra if the quality's there.
The two men walked out onto the boardwalk of Eagle Tail. Tinker's Cafe was at the far end of town from the courthouse, and as they passed by the newspaper office, Blanton came running out.
Mr. McAllister! Mr. McAllister, would you grant me an interview about the events of last night?
We're just going to lunch, Tom.
No problem. I'll just lock up and come to lunch with you, if you don't mind.
I'm not sure.
I've offered to buy the marshal lunch, and he's not sure how far the invitation goes. I had a good night at the card table last night, so come along.
Yes, I heard you taught Mr. J.T. Finley a lesson in how to run a bluff. Just let me lock up.
Falcon and Kingsley waited until the newspaper editor locked his office. Then the three of them continued on down the street toward the Tinker's Cafe. The cafe was a small, white building with two large windows in front. Even before they reached it, they could smell the delicious aromas of the day's fare. The three men found the table at the back of the room. Falcon took the chair that put his back to the wall. They were halfway through their meal. Falcon saw him. He was tall and slim, and sporting an oversized handlebar mustache. Falcon had seen him the night before in the saloon. Only when he saw him last night, he had no injuries.
That man.
What man?
Falcon nodded toward the man who had just come in.
The man over there. He's got a scab on his forehead.
Is that what we're doing now? Because whoever was with Dunaway jumped out the window, we should be looking for men with cuts?
Fresh cuts. When I saw him in the saloon last night, his face was clear. Now he has a long red slash on his forehead. If we got closer to him, I expect he might have cuts in other places as well.
Wait a minute. Damn! That's one of the...
Holy shit. He is one of them.
One of who?
One of the men who came by the store the day before your brother and sister were taken from the train. He was with Loomis Tate and the Albino.
Are you sure?
I'm damn sure.
I thought you knew Loomis Tate and all his men.
I know them all but Loomis' brother. And if that man was one of them, then I'd take bets he's Kelly Tate.
And you say you saw him last night?
Yeah.
I wonder what he's doing in town. You'd think he'd be as far away from here as he can get.
He's here to see me, I expect. We were supposed to meet in the Long Trail tonight. He's here to give me directions on how I'm to pay the $20,000.
$20,000? What $20,000?
$20,000 I'm supposed to pay to ransom my brother and sister.
My God, man. Do you actually have that kind of money?
Yeah, I've got the money.
I'll be damned. That's why you've been keeping those saddlebags with you night and day.
Kingsley stood, wiping his lips with his napkin.
I think I'll just ask Mr. Tate where he was last night.
Now, don't spook him too much. I'm gonna need him in order to find Andrew and Rosanna.
I'm just gonna ask him a few questions.
Marshal Kingsley started toward Kelly.
Excuse me, Mr. Tate, is it? I wonder if I could ask you where you were last night.
Kelly Tate pulled his pistol.
Now put that away, Tate. I just wanna...
Falcon had not anticipated anything like this, but he had not drawn his pistol. Now, because he was sitting down at the table, he was at a disadvantage. until Tate realized that, and he swung his pistol toward the table where Falcon and Bland were still sitting. Falcon lost time in going for his own gun because his first inclination was to get the newspaper editor out of the line of fire. Kelly fired and the bullet hit the water pitcher on Falcon's table. Falcon put his pistol back in his holster and hurried over to see Crack Kingsley. Blanton got there nearly as quickly. Little flecks of blood appeared on Kingsley's lips. The bullet had penetrated his lungs.
Get the doctor, somebody! Please, get the doctor!
No need getting old Doc Walton away from his lunch. We both know I won't last till he gets here.
Oh, damn.
Blanton reached down to grab his friend's hand.
You know, I'm about to die. But I'm not afraid. Sort of funny when you think about it. You spend your whole life afraid of it. Then when it actually happens, you figure it's not that big a thing after all.
You're a brave man, Kingsley. I shouldn't have let you confront him.
It was my job. You think he was the other man last night?
I'm sure he was.
Did you kill him?
Yeah.
I thought you wanted to talk to him to find out about your brother and sister.
I did.
But you killed him.
I had no choice.
Well, how you find your brother and sister now?
Oh, I'll find them.
You know what? I believe you will. And I think everything's gonna turn out all right for you.
Does it hurt?
No. No, that's a funny thing. I'm numb. Doesn't hurt it.
Kingsley's eyes, still open, began to glaze over. Falcon reached down and closed them. Loomis, Strayhorn, Logan, and the albino were out by the corral. All but Logan were saddling their horses.
Why do I have to stay?
I'll explain it to you again, Logan. Kelly is going to bring McAllister to the North Fork, where McAllister will think that we're holding his brother and sister for him. We'll ambush him there.
What about the money, Loomis?
After we kill him, we'll get the money. Come back here to split it, then each of us go our own way.
Logan nodded back toward the house and the hostages inside.
What about them?
What do you mean, what about them? I thought we'd already agreed that we were going to kill them.
Yeah, that's just my point. If we're going to kill them anyway, why not just do it now and be done with it? That way we can all be together when we take the money from McAllister.
Those two are our insurance, just in case something goes wrong.
What could go wrong? You said you had it all figured out.
There's always something that can go wrong. Only a fool doesn't plan for it.
How
do you what, Logan?
How do I know you'll actually come back here? You know, if the money's there and all, I don't have any... What was that word you used? Insurance. I don't have any insurance that you'll come back and I'll get my share.
Insurance? We don't need insurance among ourselves. All we need is a little trust.
Trust? You mean the only insurance I have is to trust that you'll come back?
It's all the insurance you need.
You said only a fool doesn't make plans in case something goes wrong.
Oh, for Christ's sake, Logan. I'll stay.
The albino had saddled his horse, but now he took the saddle off and carried it back into the barn.
You don't have to do that, Michaels. I was just...
Yeah, I know what you were just. You were just moaning and bellyaching. I'm tired of listening to it. Saddle your horse and go with him.
All right. That is, if you're sure you don't mind.
I'm not worried about getting my share.
You see there, Logan? Michaels knows the meaning of trust.
The albino pulled his pistol and rotated the cylinder as if checking the load in all the chambers.
Yeah. Trust. And a loaded .44. And if I don't get my share of the money, I'll hunt you down and kill each and every one of you.
You'll get your share.
I know I will.
The frozen smile on the albino's face reminded Logan of the perpetual smile on a skull, and he shivered involuntarily.
All right. All right, let's go.
The albino walked up the porch of the house, but remained outside until the others rode off. He stepped back inside. Andrew and Rosanna were sitting side by side, tied in chairs.
Well now, children. It looks like it's just you and me.
Why? Where did the others go?
They went to get the money.
What money?
The money your brother's gonna pay to get you back.
You mean Falcon knows that you have us?
Of course he knows. Loomis sent him a note. How else would we get the money if we didn't tell him?
That's where you boys made your first mistake.
What are you talking about? What was our first mistake?
Telling Falcon that you had us. Don't you know that he'll come for us?
We're counting on him coming for you. And we're counting on him to bring the money. Only when he shows up with the money, well, let's just say that things won't be going the way he's counting.
On the contrary, knowing my brother as I do, I believe that things will go exactly as he plans.
However it goes, it won't make no difference to the two of you. You're our prisoners, and you're going to stay our prisoners until we decide what to do with you.
In the meantime, can you loosen the ropes? They're so tight that they're cutting off the circulation to my hands.
Sure. I'll loosen the ropes.
The albino walked over to Rosanna's chair and untied the ropes that held her hands behind the chair. Then he untied her feet and legs, completely freeing her.
You want to stand up and walk around a bit? Maybe get some circulation back?
Oh, yes, thank you. What about my brother?
What about him?
Are you going to untie him as well?
I don't think so.
Please, don't you see? If you don't untie him as well, then I don't want to be untied either.
It don't make no difference what you want, girlie. It's your job to keep me happy. It's not my job to keep you happy. Now, get up and walk around. Get some feeling back in them arms and legs.
But...
Do it, Rosanna!
Andrew, I can't with you...
Do it!
Rosanna stood up, rubbed her wrist a few times, and walked around.
I tell you what, girlie. While you're walking around like that, how about taking off them clothes?
Are you telling me to get undressed?
Who? Me? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what I just told you. But let me make myself clearer. What I actually want you to do is just start taking them off real slow, like. You know, your shoes, your stockings, just one thing at a time.
I will not.
I'll kill you if you don't.
You're probably going to kill us anyway, so go ahead.
Are you telling me you don't care if I kill you or not?
That's exactly what I'm telling you. If you're going to shoot me, shoot, you maggot-faced pig.
All right. You've shown me how brave you are with your own life. Now, what about your brothers? Start taking off them clothes, Missy, or I'll shoot him.
No, don't!
You gonna start taking them off?
Rosanna, you don't have to do anything you don't want to.
Oh, yes, she does. Because if she don't, I'm gonna splatter your brains all over the place.
I'll do it.
That's a good girl. Make sure you do it real slow now.
As the albino was looking at Rosanna, he didn't see the slight head movement Andrew made. He didn't see it, but Rosanna did. Andrew was telling her to move a bit to her left. Rosanna immediately knew what Andrew wanted. He wanted her to position the albino in a way that would prevent him from having any peripheral vision of her brother. She had no idea what Andrew had in mind, but whatever it was, she would help him in any way she could. And for now, that meant she was going to have to keep the albino's eyes glued to her. Rosanna moved a chair, then lifted one foot up onto the chair. As she did so, she let her skirt fall back, disclosing a long, well-shaped leg, partially concealed by her pantaloons.
You know, when I did this for King Leopold II of Belgium, I had music playing.
You took off your clothes for a king?
Leaning over in such a way as to show some cleavage, Rosanna began unbuckling her shoes.
Oh, yes. What could I do? He was royalty, and I'm just a helpless woman.
Did you take off all your clothes?
Behind the albino, Rosanna could see that somehow Andrew had managed to get both his hands untied. Now he was bent forward, untying his feet.
I got completely naked. He was very complimentary about my breasts.
Rosanna put her hands under her breasts, forcing him up to exaggerate the cleavage.
Oh, what do you think? Do you like them?
Forget what I said about taking off your clothes real slow. I want you to shuck out of them fast.
Rosanna saw Andrew stand up.
Do you want me to start here?
Rosanna pulled the top of her dress down slightly to expose more of herself. Then her hands went to the hem of her skirt.
Or do you want me to start here?
I want you to...
I don't like it when you look at my sister like that.
Well, it don't matter much what you like, boy. I'm gonna do whatever... What the hell?
Andrew broke the chair upside the albino's head, and he went down.
Bravo! Is he dead?
No, I don't think so.
Kneeling beside the albino, Andrew felt his neck.
He still has a pulse.
Andrew unbuckled the albino's gun belt, then put it on.
How did you get loose?
I've been working on it all morning. When you asked him to loosen my wrist, too, I thought the jig was up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. You held his attention long enough to let me finish. Come on, let's get out of here.
Pulling the pistol from its holster, Andrew pointed it at the albino.
Andrew, are you...
Sure that I want to do this? No, I'm not sure.
Andrew let the hammer down slowly on the pistol, then returned it to the holster.
In fact, I can't do it. Come on.
10 minutes later, they had two horses saddled.
Let's go.
Which way?
Andrew pointed south.
That way.
Let's go north.
Why north?
Look at their tracks. They went south.
Well, if you knew which way we should go, why did you ask me in the first place?
To make you feel good.
Yeah!
They left the way station at a gallop and held it well over a mile before slowing to a trot, then to a walk.
Let's give the horses a rest. We're going to have to depend on them for a while. It won't be good to run them into the ground.
I agree.
Rosanna leaned forward and patted her horse on the neck.
What is it? What are you laughing about?
I was just thinking. After this, you won't have to be making up stories about your past.
After this?
Yes.
You know, that's what I like about you, Rosanna. You have a lot of confidence. You said after this as if you truly believe there will be an after this.
Oh, I believe it all right. I truly believe that someday we'll be sitting around a table at the Metropole telling the tale of this great adventure.
You think so?
Oh, I know so. And you'll have everyone in the cast, especially the ladies, hanging on your every word. Why, you'll be their hero.
Oh, I won't be the only center of attention. What about you?
Me? What did I do?
Your Dance of the Seven Veils? All the men will want to hear about that in minute detail.
And you will tell it, dear brother?
Oh, I will.
And will you do it justice?
Justice?
Yes. Will you describe it in the seductive manner in which I performed?
I'll be damned. I believe you enjoyed that. The next thing you know, you'll be wanting to incorporate the dance into our act.
And why not? Don't you think such an act would go over well for our audience? Certainly our audiences are more sophisticated than that albino character.
A Jezebel! My sister has turned into a Jezebel! Come on. The horses are rested enough. We need to keep moving.
Wait.
Wait? Wait for what?
Rosanna tore a little strip of cloth from the hem of her dress and tied it to the branch of a willow tree.
What is that for?
Falcon will be looking for us.
Well, so are the bad guys. What if they see that?
I think it's a chance we need to take.
Andrew thought for a second.
Yes, I'm afraid you're right.
Lander's farm sat on top of a gently rising hill. It consisted of a house, barn, smokehouse, and corral. The house itself was surrounded by a white picket fence. Flowers grew in colorful profusion on both sides of a brick sidewalk that ran from the porch of the house down to the gate. Two women were working in the flower garden. As Falcon drew closer, he saw that one of the women was actually a girl of about 16 or so. He stopped outside the gate and dismounted.
Excuse me, is this the Lander's place?
The two looked up at him, and the youngest one wiped her face with the back of her hand. It left a little smear of dirt on her cheek.
What do you want, mister?
The voice came from the loft of the barn. Falcon had already seen the man, and he knew that the man had seen him. He knew also that the man was holding a rifle on him.
Mr. Landers, my name is Falcon McAllister.
A boy came out of the barn. Like his father, the boy had been holding a rifle too, but he was no longer pointing it at Falcon. Instead, he was holding it down by his side.
Jesse! Jesse, you get back here! You know better than to expose yourself like that!
But, Pa, this is Falcon McAllister. Ain't you never heard of him?
You're Jesse?
Yes, sir.
You're the one I came to see.
Really? You came to see me?
What do you want with my boy?
By now, Landers had completely exposed himself, and like the boy was holding his rifle down by his side.
I want to talk to him, that's all. That is, if you don't mind.
What do you want to talk to my boy about?
About Johnny. I'm after the man who killed your son.
Just a minute. Wait right there until I come down.
Falcon waited until Landers came down from the barn. Landers started toward him, still carrying his rifle. Then, as if thinking about it, he went back and leaned his rifle against the front of the barn. Landers brushed his hands together, then extended his right hand.
I'm Josh Landers.
Falcon McAllister.
I'm Jesse, Mr. McAllister.
Jesse extended his hand as well, and Falcon shook it.
Mr. McAllister, your name evidently means something to my boy. But I'll be honest with you, I never heard of you.
Pop, you know all those books Johnny reads? Read?
Yeah?
Well, most of them is about Falcon McAllister. He's a real famous gunfighter, but he only uses guns for truth and justice.
Truth and justice, huh?
Yes, sir. That's what it says on the covers of all the books they ever wrote about him. They say, Falcon McAllister is a warrior of the plains, fighting for truth and justice.
Well, in that case, we can't send him away, can we?
You know what else? He always says, get ready to eat supper in hell, just before he kills someone. Don't you, Mr. McAllister?
That's what the books say.
That one phrase had become such a standard part of all the novels about him that, though it wasn't true, Falcon no longer denied it.
You killed a lot of people, have you, Mr. McAllister?
Now, Mr. Landers, those are stories. And they don't call them penny dreadfuls for nothing.
Well, I don't suppose I can hold you responsible for what they write about you in those books. So you're going after the men who killed Johnny, are you?
I am.
Why? Has someone put up a reward?
I don't know. But if nobody has, they should.
So you're not going after them for the reward?
No.
Are you going after them in the pursuit of, what is it, truth and justice?
Well, now that's certainly a noble goal. But the fact is, I'm going after them because they have my brother and sister. They've taken him prisoner.
I see. I admire your honesty, Mr. McAllister. How about staying for lunch?
Falcon started to decline the invitation, but he realized that he was hungry, and the idea of a home-cooked meal sounded damn good to him.
All right. Thanks. I will stay for lunch.
The family and Falcon all sat around the dinner table. The Landers consisted of Josh and his wife Mary, their 16-year-old daughter Sue, and 11-year-old son Jesse.
Of course, we had Johnny as well.
You're sitting in his chair now.
I'm sorry.
Don't be foolish. You have no cause to be sorry. And I had no cause to say such a thing. It's just that we still miss him.
Of course you do.
Mary was a good-looking woman, and her daughter Sue was already exceptionally pretty. Sitting down to dinner with a family like this reminded Falcon of what had been taken from him when his wife was killed.
Maybe you can tell me, Mr. McAllister, What sort of men would kill a boy over a couple of horses?
They're evil personified, Mrs. Landers. Back in Colorado, they murdered an entire family just to steal some horses. They'd all been tried and convicted of murder and were waiting for the hangman's noose when they managed to break out of jail. To my knowledge, they've killed 6 people to date. I just hope it doesn't become 2 more.
2 more? Oh, yes, I see what you're talking about. I pray that they're still safe.
I thank you for that, Mrs. Landers, especially in light of what you've gone through.
I hope you kill them. I hope you kill them all.
I intend to do just that.
Mr. McAllister, you will excuse me for asking, but why would they have taken your brother and sister?
My brother and sister are stage performers in New York. They're quite well known, not only in New York, but all over the world. Loomis and his bunch took them to hold for ransom.
Well, I do hope you get to them in time. Now, you said you wanted to talk to Jesse. Be my guest. Jesse, tell him anything he wants to know.
All right, Pa.
Oh, first of all, Jesse, I read in the paper that you lay on your back on the bottom of the pond breathing through a hollow reed. Is that true?
Yes, sir. It's where I used to hide from Johnny.
Well, let me tell you that I think that is one of the smartest things I've ever heard of.
Well, maybe it'll show up in one of your books someday.
Well, maybe it will. Now, did you see which way they went when they left?
Well, I didn't see them leave because I was still hiding. But when I come up from the water, I sat the tracks and they was heading that way.
North.
Any towns up that way?
Not till you get to Jim. That's a good 30 miles.
I doubt they would take them up into town. Anything else up there? Old mine shaft, line shacks?
Nothing that I know of. Though I'm reasonably certain there must be some farms or ranches.
Mr. McAllister? Pretty has a tie by her shoe.
Pretty?
My horse. It's the horse Jesse was riding that day. One of the horses the men stole. Her name's Pretty, and she has a tie by her shoe.
Pretty. You ever heard of such a dumb name for a horse?
Papa said I could name her anything I wanted, and she's so pretty that I named her Pretty.
Knowing that one of the horses has a tie by her shoe is very helpful. Thank you, Sue. That's a good bit of information to know.
Sue beamed under the praise.
And thank you, Jesse, Mr. and Mrs. Landers for the meal and the information. You've all been a big help.
Do you think you'll find them?
Oh, I'll find them, all right.
But the country is so big.
It's big, but there ain't many places they can go. Besides, they'll be looking for me as hard as I'll be looking for them.
Why will they be looking for you?
Because they think I'm going to pay them a ransom for Andrew and Rosanna.
Would you? I mean, if that was the only way you could get your brother and sister back, would you pay a ransom for them?
Mrs. Landers, if I know for sure that paying a ransom would get them back, I would do so in a heartbeat. Their lives are worth much more than money to me. The problem is, even if I paid the ransom, I don't think they'd let them go. So it's become a cat-and-mouse game. They're looking for me and the money, and I'm looking for them and my brother and sister. We'll find each other. Well, I best be going. Again, I thank you for everything.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes, ma'am?
Thank you. It'll give us some peace knowing that the killers of our boy are going to pay.
Falcon nodded, then let himself out the door. With their horses tethered behind them, Andrew and Rosanna were lying on their stomachs. Andrew held the pistol stretched out in front of him with the hammer cocked.
Don't frighten him off.
A rabbit jumped once, then fell and lay very still.
You got him!
Yeah. Now the only problem is going to be how to skin him without a knife.
All you have to do is get it started, then you can pull the skin off. Don't you remember Pa teaching us to do that?
I remember how squeamish you were about it.
You weren't exactly Daniel Boone.
I know. I didn't take to it all that well either. But I'm glad Pa insisted that we do it, because now that I have to, I know that I can.
How about your belt buckle?
What?
Rosanna pointed to the belt buckle on the pistol belt Andrew had taken from the albino.
I'll bet you could sharpen the edge of the buckle on a rock, then use it to get the skinning started.
Good idea.
I don't know whether or not we can get a fire started by rubbing sticks together, though. That's what's worrying me.
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll take care of that. You start filing down the belt buckle.
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
Yes, in a rather perverse way, I am.
Do you think you can actually get a fire started?
Let's just say that I believe your humble thespian will be sufficient to the task.
As Rosanna found a rock and began filing on the belt buckle, Andrew gathered wood for a fire. He also found two forked sticks and a long green limb to use as a skewer. Finally, he gathered a lot of dry grass and piled it up under the little tent of twigs.
How are you coming on that belt buckle?
Pretty good. You can just about shave with it.
Rosanna handed the buckle over to Andrew. Andrew ran his thumb across it, then nodded in approval. Picking up the rabbit, he discovered to his delight that the buckle would work quite well. Using the sharpened edge, he sliced the skin down the belly, then pulled the skin off. After that, he cut open the belly and pulled out the intestines.
Now, let's see you rub those sticks together.
I have a better idea.
Andrew pulled a shell from one of the loops on the pistol belt, then separated the bullet from the shell casing. Punching one of the shells out of the pistol, he pushed the defanged cartridge into the empty chamber. Then, putting the barrel of the pistol in the dry grass, he pulled the trigger. The muzzle flash ignited the dry grass, and by feeding it more grass and a few twigs, a fire was started.
Oh, Andrew, that was brilliant!
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Andrew pushed the green willow skewer through the skinned and gutted rabbit. He suspended the skewered rabbit over the open fire, and within moments, the rabbit began browning and perfuming the air with the aroma of cooked meat.
Now, if we could only come up with some way to duplicate Delmonico's Grande Sauce de la Viande, the evening would be complete.
Forget Delmonico's meat sauce. I'd be satisfied with a little salt.
Ah, who needs salt? Wasn't it Benjamin Franklin who said hunger is the best seasoning?
Well, I don't know who said it, but we're about to put it to the test.
Andrew removed the rabbit from the skewer, then pulled it apart into two pieces. He handed one piece to Rosanna.
Oh, it's delicious.
Andrew McAllister rides again.
Strayhorn, you see anything?
Strayhorn was standing on the top of a rocky precipice, looking back toward Eagle Pass.
Nothing, Loomis.
That's funny. If they met at 4 o'clock like they're supposed to, they've had plenty of time to get here by now.
Loomis, Logan, and Strayhorn were at North Fork, where Beaver and Gopher Creek joined. It was there that they were to meet Kelly and presumably Falcon McAllister and the money. But though they had been there for a couple of hours, nobody had shown yet.
Loomis, you don't think Kelly would...
Would what? You're not going to ask me if I think Kelly would take the money and run out on us, are you, Logan? Because Kelly's my brother, and I wouldn't like you thinking that.
No, I wasn't going to say nothing like that.
Then what was you going to say?
I was just going to ask if you think maybe Kelly would have got into some kind of trouble, is all.
Loomis ran his hand through his hair and looked nervously toward the town.
I don't know. Maybe. Strayhorn, you see anything yet?
No, I don't see nothing.
Loomis waited another few minutes, pacing back and forth nervously. Finally, he called up the Strayhorn again.
Strayhorn, come on down and get mounted. We're going.
Strayhorn picked his way down the side of the rock, then walked over to where the horses had been tethered.
Where are we going?
We're going into town. I'm going to find out what happened.
Is that a good idea? I mean, us going into town and all?
Nobody but McAllister would recognize us. And if he is there, I want the son of a bitch to recognize us. We need to find him.
And Kelly.
Yeah, and Kelly.
It was late afternoon, just after the close of business, when the three men arrived. The two saloons, the Long Trail and the Jayhawker, were already filling up with their evening trade. Loomis, Strayhorn, and Logan rode down the middle of the street.
My God, Loomis, look over there.
Look over where?
Over there, out in front of the hardware store. You see that sign?
Looking in the direction indicated by Logan, Loomis saw two wooden coffins standing upright. They could see that there were bodies in both coffins, though from this distance they were too far away to see who the unfortunate occupants were.
Killed in justifiable homicide by Falcon McAllister. If no one comes to claim these two bodies, they will be buried in Potter's Field tomorrow at 2 p.m.
Loomis angled his horse over toward the coffins. When he got closer, he could see who was in them. The first man was Dunaway, a stranger to Loomis.
Oh, shit. Loomis.
Yeah, I see him.
The person in the second coffin was his brother, Kelly.
I guess that means Kelly didn't get our money.
Money? God damn it, Logan, that's Kelly in that coffin, and you're worrying about money?
Well, that's what we come to town for, ain't it? The money.
And to find and kill McAllister.
Well, hell, Loomis, there ain't really nothing changed just because McAllister killed Kelly. We was going to kill McAllister and take the money before Kelly got herself killed. We're still going to kill him and take the money, ain't we?
Loomis looked at Strayhorn for a moment, then ran his hand through his hair.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. Let's spread out and look through the town. If you see him, don't do nothing yet. Come get the other two. I don't care how good the son of a bitch is, he can't beat all three of us together.
When the albino opened his eyes, he wondered what he was doing sleeping on the floor. Then he realized he wasn't sleeping. He was on the floor because he'd been knocked out. Somehow, the Eastern Dandy had managed to get himself untied. He didn't have to wonder what he had been hit with. There were pieces of broken chair lying all around him. The albino got up too fast, and a sudden wave of dizziness swept over him. He staggered over to the wall, then put his hand out to support himself until the dizziness passed. He was also nauseous, and his head hurt. Putting his hand to the tender spot on his head, he came back with bloody fingers. The blood appeared especially bright red against the pallor of his skin. Dropping his hand to his side, the albino realized that his gun was gone, and not only his gun belt as well. If Loomis and the others came back to find the prisoners gone, they wouldn't let him hear the end of it. It was bad enough that he had let some fancy Dan man and a woman make a fool of him. He wasn't going to wait around and let the others have their fun at his expense. He was going after the two, and he was going to bring them back. The albino went outside. He could see that his horse was still in the barn, and so was his saddle.
That was your first mistake. You should have taken my horse.
Going to his saddle, he opened one of the saddlebags and pulled out the gun and holster he had taken from the deputy when they escaped jail back in Colorado Springs. He also picked up a rifle and a box of rounds from the place on the wall.
Second mistake. You should have checked my saddlebags. Now, you're gonna pay for your mistakes.
Michael took the saddle over to the horse and dropped it on the animal's back. A few moments later, saddled and mounted, the albino rode out of the corral. For a moment, he was puzzled as to which way was the best one to go. Then he saw the tracks on the ground. Three sets of tracks trailed south, two sets went north.
A man and a woman from New York, alone in the wilderness of Kansas. How far did they get? Yeah.
Logan and Strayhorn went into the Jayhawker Saloon while Loomis went into the Long Trail. Loomis bought a beer, then moved around the bar listening in on the various conversations until he heard McAllister's name mentioned.
Where'd McAllister shoot that fella?
Which one are you talking about, Dunaway or Tate?
I know he shot the one in the middle of the night in the hotel when he broke into his room. I'm talking about the second one. What was his name, Tate?
Yeah, Kelly Tate. McAllister shot him over at Taker's Cafe. Him and Marshal Kingsley and Blanton was all having lunch together, and Tate come in and Kingsley recognized him, so Kingsley goes over to say something to him. Well, without so much as a fare thee well, Tate pulls his gun and kills poor old crack Kingsley. Then he turns his pistol toward the table where McAllister and Blanton was sitting, and he started shooting at them.
And that's when McAllister shot back.
But damn it, Charlie, I was telling the story.
Well, Frank, you was taking forever to tell it.
Well, you're so all fired and formed. Why'd Tate start shooting at McAllister?
Probably for the same reason Dunaway tried to take McAllister on. I reckon he was just wanting to make a name for himself for being the one that killed McAllister, only he got himself killed instead.
Nope, it was for the money.
Money? What money? McAllister ain't no wanted man. There ain't no Dodgers on him.
No, not reward money. Ransom money.
I ain't following none of this.
Well, you know that McAllister's brother and sister was took from the train last week, don't you?
Yeah, sure, I know that. It's in the paper at all. Besides which, everyone's talking about it.
Uh-huh. Well, it turns out that this Tate fella that McAllister killed is one of the ones that took the McAllisters.
How do you know he was one of them?
I heard it from someone who was in the cafe when it all happened. It seems they had sent a letter to McAllister asking for a lot of ransom money to turn him loose. And McAllister brung the money with him. Didn't you notice how he never left them saddlebags out of his sight?
Yeah. When he was in here, I seen that he had them hanging across his shoulder. Thought it was kind of odd, but I didn't give it that much thought.
Well, sir, them saddlebags were stuffed with money, they was. $20,000 in U.S. greenbacks. And Tate was supposed to pick up that money in exchange for McAllister's brother and sister. Only something went wrong and he commenced shooting. I mean, next thing you know, Tate's dead, the brother and sister is still captured somewhere, and McAllister's still carrying around $20,000.
Hard, but ain't that a lot of money, though?
I wonder where McAllister got so much money.
Oh, hell, Marty, don't you know? Falcon McAllister's a rich man. He's a very rich man. For him to be carrying $20,000 around in his saddlebags would be like, well, be like one of us carrying $200 around.
Shit.
If I scraped up all the money I had in the world, it wouldn't come to $200.
Loomis approached the three drinkers.
Excuse me, I hope you fellas don't mind my listening into your palaver, but I'm a stranger here and I don't mind telling you that's one rip snorter of a story. You had a shootout in the street right here in town, did you?
Wasn't on the street. It was over at Tinker's Cafe.
And the shootout was over $20,000?
Well, that's what Frank here's saying. I figured it was because Tate killed our marshal.
Because the marshal figured out that Tate was one of the ones that took them two actors, who was McAllister's brother and sister.
For the ransom, which gets us back to the $20,000 that McAllister's carrying around with him. It wouldn't surprise me none if the money wasn't safer hanging in a saddlebag over McAllister's shoulder than it would be if it was in the bank.
Yeah, I'd hate to be the one that tried to take that money from Falcon McAllister.
Where is this McAllister fella now?
Why do you want to know? You ain't gonna try to take it from him, are you?
Do I look like I'm crazy? Hey, bartender, we need 4 refills here. It's just that I've never seen a man so rich he could carry $20,000 around in his saddlebags. I'd like to see that.
3 new beers were put in front of Frank, Charlie, and Marty. Loomis took his.
Thanks, Mr.
Jones.
Mr. Jones.
Well, Mr. Jones, if you want to see McAllister, you ain't gonna see him anywhere in Eagle Tail. If you want to see him, you'll need to find the lowlifes who took his sister and brother.
Oh?
Yes, sir. Right after all the dust settled from the shooting, McAllister went out on the trail after him.
Damn. Too bad. I'd really like to see me a man that rich.
Loomis finished his drink. Then, with an amicable smile, he left the long trail and walked across the street to the Jayhawker. The Jayhawker did business with a rougher crowd than did the long trail. The long trail was proud of its polished mahogany bar and gilt-edged mirror. The Jayhawker's bar was made of unpainted ripsawed wood, and there were no towels or towel rings for the customers. Even the bar girls showed the difference in quality. They were generally of riper years and more dispirited than the girls at the long trail. Loomis looked around the room for a moment, squinting through the cloud of smoke. He saw Logan and Strayhorn sitting at a table in the back of the room. They were engaged in animated conversation with 2 other men. Loomis started toward them and was intercepted by one of the bar girls.
Honey, you want to buy a girl a drink?
Loomis looked at her. The dissipation of her trade had treated her badly. Her nose had been broken, and she was missing a couple of teeth.
Get away from me, you ugly cow.
The woman's face reflected hurt, then anger, as she turned and walked away. Loomis reached the back of the saloon.
Logan, Strayhorn, I thought you two were supposed to be looking for someone.
Yeah, he ain't in here.
I know he ain't. He ain't even in town. Who are these men?
This here's Luke and this is Seth. They're good men.
How do you know they're good men?
I don't know Luke. He's a local. But Seth has spoke good of him. And if he's good enough for Seth, then he's all right by me.
Yeah, well, I don't know either one of them.
I knowed your brother, Kelly. Me and him was pards once, and it pained me to see him standing in the coffin out there for the whole town to gawk at.
So you knew Kelly, huh?
Yep. It's been a while back, but I knowed him all right.
Never mentioned you.
I don't doubt that he didn't say nothing about me. Last time he seen me, I was lying gutshot on the streets of Boulder. I guess he figured I died. Don't many folks survive being gutshot.
How would you know him?
Seth grinned and pointed to Loomis's drooping eye.
I knowed him well enough to know how you come by that drooping eye.
Oh? How?
Your other brother, Drew, hit you in the face with a shovel when you was all kids.
That was true. And what's more, Seth had to learn it from Kelly, because Loomis sure as hell never told the story to anyone.
Damn! Is that true? Did Drew really hit you with a shovel?
Yeah, it's true.
Strayhorn tells me that McAllister is also the one that killed Drew.
That's right.
Seems to me like this McAllister fellow's whittling your family down pretty good. First Drew, then Kelly. I wouldn't doubt but what he has his sights set on you now.
Yeah, well, that's just fine, because I have my sights on him.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't mind getting him in my sights my own self. Of course, he never killed no brother of mine or nothing like that, but he did kill a pard, and I'd like to pay him back.
Do you think he's got the money?
What money, Luke?
The ransom money he was asking for to get his brother and sister back.
God damn it! Is there any part of our business you two haven't been blabbering about? Think maybe we ought to go down to the newspaper office so they can print the story?
It wasn't just blabbering, Loomis.
It wasn't. I'd like to know what it was, then.
It was recruiting.
Recruiting? What do you mean it was recruiting?
Well, it's like this. Me and Logan here was talking it over.
You and Logan was talking it over, was you?
Yeah. We was talking it over, and we decided it might not be a bad idea to let Seth and Luke in on our job.
And why would we want to do that?
Because of McAllister. I mean, he's done killed both your brothers. I don't know how the fight went between McAllister and Kelly, but I seen him with Drew. Hell, you seen him with Drew, too. And Drew was about the fastest with a gun I ever seen until I seen McAllister.
Strayhorn's right, Loomis. I wouldn't want to go up against McAllister with just the three of us and the albino. I mean, there was five of us last time and he got the better of us.
Loomis stroked his chin for a moment and studied Seth and Luke.
I reckon you'd want a cut of the money if you'd come in.
Well, yeah. I mean, if we're going to be part of it, we'd like our cut.
Logan, Strayhorn, is this what you both want?
Yeah.
All right, good.
The four men shook hands in congratulations.
Only I should tell you, their money's going to be coming from your cut. I ain't giving up none of my money.
Wait a minute. That ain't no way fair.
Fair or not, that's the way it's going to be, so you can take it or leave it.
How much money are we talking about here?
$20,000.
$20,000? My God, that's all the money there is in the world.
I get half of it. You boys can split up what's left.
Why do you get half?
Because it was my idea. Now that's the terms. Are you in or not?
That'd be $2,000 apiece, Seth. I ain't never had no $2,000 in my whole life. Have you?
No, I ain't.
I say let's do it.
Is
this money for real? I mean, does Falcon McAllister actually have that kind of money?
Yeah, he has that kind of money. Fact is, he has that money on him right now.
What?
He's carrying it around with him in a pair of saddlebags. I heard him talking about it over at the Long Trail.
$20,000 in saddlebags. Think of that.
So, what do we do?
We go back to the way station, take care of some business there, then pick up the albino and start tailing McAllister.
What about the,
What about what?
You know, the, people we have there. What are we going to do with them?
We're going to take care of them. We don't need them as insurance anymore. We know that McAllister has the money. All we have to do is find him.
Seems a shame to, Well, I mean, the woman is so pretty. Seems like a waste to just take care of her.
I didn't say we wouldn't have a little fun first.
Aw, shit, Loomis. I don't know about that.
What do you mean you don't know?
Well, goddamn, there's six of us.
There was five of us back at that farm, and that went all right.
Yeah, but there was two women there. Well, a girl and a woman. Here, we just got the one woman.
Loomis looked over at the soiled dove who had approached him when he first came into the saloon.
Hey, you! Come here!
The woman, who was probably no older than 30, but who looked 50, flashed a gap-toothed smile at being summoned. She hurried over to the table.
There's five of us here. If we paid you to go upstairs with us, could you handle all five of us?
Good Lord! You don't mean at the same time, do you?
No, no, not at the same time. My question is, could you handle all five of us, one at a time?
Oh, hell yeah.
And what if we had one more friend?
All of you will pay?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah. I can handle all six of you.
What's the most number of men you ever done in one night?
19.
All right, thanks.
So, we going up?
You really think I'd want to share the sheets with someone as ugly as you are? Go on, get.
Suddenly, and unexpectedly, the woman's eyes filled with tears.
I'll be damned. Look at that. I don't think I ever seen a whore cry before.
Go the fuck away!
The woman turned and walked away.
Unprofessional as hell. Still worried about whether one woman can handle all of us, Logan?
No, I guess not.
Good, then let's go.